document goes out the window, said no founding father ever. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
You never want a serious crisis to go to waste. And what I mean by that, it's an opportunity to do things that you think you could not do before.
Boy, isn't that the truth? It goes hand in hand with the opening of that today's show. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show on a Friday. Glad you're spending some time with us. And when I say us, I mean myself. And I'm not speaking about myself in the form of two. Alex Newman, my guest this hour. I'm so happy to have you. Alex Newman, one of the just one of the most stellar journalists. And even Pest, I was talking. I know your ears might have been burning, Alex, but Dr. Duke Pest and I were talking about you, and he was just saying just what an incredible journalist you really are, and how you go for the truth of the story, and that's the most important thing to you, and that you've sacrificed a lot to do that. And it really is, in this day and time, with the headlines with CNN and New York Times battling over everything right now, and MSNBC and New York Times saying no, you know, you horrible CNN people. It's been kind of interesting to watch. And so with a battle like that, I welcome Alex Newman, journalist, reporter, to the show, who just does some tremendous pieces. Welcome, Alex.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Kate. It's always a tremendous pleasure and an honor to be with you. And I just can't say enough nice things about your show, because it is awesome and everybody ought to be listening to it.
Well, thanks
for having me.
Thanks for that. I really appreciate it. And that was a very long-winded intro, I know, for you. But but you do some great work. And I really want people to understand that when you find really great journalists, man, make sure they get heard and read. And so you're doing a lot of great pieces. And you've just recently put up several that I really want to talk about. And the first one being Assange. This is on the heels of, I think it was Melissa who sent this to me, was talking about how they're actually killing him. And there was there's a lot of chatter on the ground right now about how he's being treated. I had the author on that wrote, she was privy to some information. She wrote an article for Lou Rockwell, and the article talked really about the fact that he was being given these drugs, and they try to call them truth serum drugs, but they're heavier and more complicated than that. They've been doing this to whistleblowers and prisoners for a long time, and nobody wants to admit it. And that those drugs make people seem like they can't put a sentence together. Their memories are strange. Their hands go up trying to find stuff in the air that's not there. I mean, it makes them look half crazy. And on the heels of that, I would love to know about your piece on Assange and where you went with that, because of really, there's not a lot of media attention since the arrest in mainstream.
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this case.
Sure. Did we lose him? Alex? Oh, no. You know what? I'm sure he will call right back. I think, Alex? Okay. I'm sure he'll call right back. We've had some issues with phones lately. So, hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Is this Alex?
Yes.
Okay.
This is Alex.
Sorry about that.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Not quite sure. But go right ahead.
Well, thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to speak on this, because I think this is one of the most important unreported or underreported stories in America, maybe in the world right now. I did read that article in Lou Rockwell, and that ought to frighten everyone. You know, what Assange is, essentially, is a journalist. And,
yeah,
you know, he may not write stories in the traditional sense that we understand journalism, but he's doing the very essence of journalism, which is finding out what the powerful are doing and what they don't want people to know, and then making sure people know. I mean, that is, at its core, the essence of journalism. And George Orwell is reputed to have said that, journalism is reporting what other people don't want known, and everything else is just public relations. And so in that sense, Julian Assange is one of the few real journalists today. So what we did, I wrote the story a few weeks ago, but it was only just published now. There's kind of a time delay between when we do these for the print magazine and when it's actually mailed out, so people are just now getting this. But we tried to break down some of the most important stories that became public knowledge as a result of WikiLeaks. And, you know, you almost don't hear these stories from the mainstream media, but they're huge. You know, secret illegal wars they were waging, bribing foreign governments to jump on the climate bandwagon, you know, Hillary Clinton and John Podesta, this was some of the stuff that was in their emails, you know, John Podesta going to spirit cooking meetings. This is the type of stuff, the secret war in Yemen. And even the very first story that they exposed about, you know, they released that video called Collateral Murder. Mm-hmm. They showed the murder of two Reuters journalists, the attack on the people trying to help the wounded. Right. And so what we argue in this piece is that the reason they're coming after him so hard is because he has embarrassed the deep state. He has shown how they operate, how they lie, how they kill, how they violate the law with impunity. And instead of these criminals being held accountable, you now have Julian Assange being, you know, functionally tortured in government custody. It's outrageous.
Right. It is outrageous. In fact, when we really ask ourselves, I mean, step back from this case, because he's been in our headlines for quite a while, but why is he here? Because they could not prove, they tried to put together charges in a case with the whole Chelsea Manning situation. And they tried to make it look like he was involved in that. They couldn't make that stick. They actually had nothing on that. So what did they charge him? They charged him with conspiracy. Because you and I both know, had they had any proof, they actually would have thrown the book at him on that one. But they didn't. They actually, it was like they were like hunting around. What can we come up with? So it was a conspiracy charge on that. And that's the reason that we have custody. That's the reason that this is going on right now. That's all contrived. That's just on conspiracy. Yeah. Go right ahead.
That's exactly right, Kate. And it seems like they were just looking for anything that they could get him on. So they got their stooges and the Swedish government to charge him with an alleged sex crime because, you know, he apparently didn't use a condom.
Right.
Then, you know, they got the British to come after him for, you know, trying to jump bail. Now they got the Americans after him. And if you look at the level of hysteria, you know, just a few years ago when Assange was dumping some of this information, you had high-level, high-profile people calling for the U.S. government to drop missiles on him from drones, you know, saying he's an enemy combatant. Some of these people were even calling him a traitor. Maybe they forgot that he wasn't even American. But it's crazy, Kate.
Well, and the fact that we have him and he's not an American citizen, and that it's rather shocking, actually. And I don't know if people step back enough. I don't know if, you know, people in the mainstream step back enough and actually look at the case just on the peripheral for what it is. We have absolutely no right to do this. And you're right, it got all tangled up in the Podesta emails and everything else. By the way, nobody ever said or came out to defend those Podesta emails. Nobody ever came out and said they weren't true. I should say that. Nothing he's actually exposed has ever been proven not to be true.
That's right. And if it wasn't true, you know they would have jumped all over it. And you know, that's one of the reasons I encourage people to go read this article, because unless you really follow the media incredibly closely, I mean, unless you've been following this from day one very closely, chances are you probably don't even know more than half, maybe any of these stories, perhaps except for Collateral Murder, that he revealed. You know, another one that we wrote about was the documents they leaked about the North American Union. I mean, because of Julian Assange, we have smoking gun evidence that these, I think treason is the right word here. Right. They were plotting to surrender American sovereignty and create, you know, North American currency and North American Union. They were plotting with the Canadians during the Bush administration. We got a 2007 document, I believe, in 2007.
Wow.
They were talking about how can we bypass the constitutions of the United States and Canada and merge it all into one giant European Union-style regime. And as far as I'm concerned, that's treason. That's outright
treason.
Open criminality.
You're 100% right, and we need to be retrained in what treason actually is.
Right. I mean, trying to abolish your own country, that's like the essence of it, right?
I mean,
if we lose our independence, we lose the foundation of our freedoms, we lose our ability to govern ourselves, our self-government, and that's completely unacceptable. The American people never delegated the authority to these government officials to go out there and try to surrender our sovereignty. And these people need to be held accountable. We now have proof of it, thanks to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. And it shouldn't be Assange sitting in jail right now. It should be the people involved in these plots against the United States, involved in these secret wars, involved in using banned chemical weapons. You know, this kind of stuff is worse than just criminal. I mean, we're talking war crimes. We're talking treason. These are very, very serious crimes, and somebody needs to be punished, and it's not Julian Assange.
Right. And we need to be standing up for this more as they are, as they're giving him drugs, whatever they're doing to him. And that information came way of that author who said, I have the best sources on this, and I stand by it. I spoke to her, and she said, I completely stand by my piece. And I'm not going to put it out there unless I know this is going on. And there was some fear there for her to put that out, too. And so on the heels of what you just said about our countries merging, because that's obviously in the news right now a lot, and we don't realize how horrific this is, how totally horrific it is to merge and to go around constitutions to merge. And I don't know if I even realize the gravity of that, by the way.
That's right. And, you know, the Europeans are already facing this. In fact, it's happening all over the world. Okay? That's what's really interesting. We're expected to believe that all over the world, all of a sudden, people everywhere just woke up and said, you know what, this whole nation thing, we don't really need that. Let's just all have a regional government where we're going to be ruled by unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats and technocrats. And, you know, Putin dreamed it up at the same time. He's building his Eurasian Union. The Europeans, of course, have their European Union, which, you know, many of them are now struggling very hard to get out of, with, you know, Brexit and things like this. In South America, they've been building the Union of South American States, completely dominated by communists and socialists. In Africa, they've now imposed an African Union on Africans, where they have an African parliament. They're working on an African passport, an African currency. They already have an African military. And, you know, what happens when these kinds of regional governments form is people lose completely the ability to hold their governing officials accountable. They lose their freedom. They lose their national identity, their national sovereignty. And it's completely unacceptable. And they're trying to do the same thing here. You know, one of the reasons we were able to hold them off, we know Robert Pastor from the Council on Foreign Relations, that he was actually the point man running this operation. He wrote in his book shortly before he died that it was the John Birch Society and Eagle Forum that managed to prevent any progress on this agenda during the Bush administration and during the Obama administration. But these people never gave up, and as soon as they think we're not paying attention, we know they're going to be right back at it, trying to merge our country with Mexico and with Canada, and so we need to hold them accountable.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. It's destructive and horrible, and we've outed that since the moment they were putting that together, when Trump assigned what's his name? Is it Rosenstein?
Lighthizer.
To the task. And it is. It's beyond detrimental. Detrimental is a very light word. We can't even call it what it is, because it would absolutely erode our sovereignty. And so going back to Assange a little bit too, in these kinds of documents coming out, man, the list is long. I was looking through the list of documents just recently, a couple days ago actually, and it is amazing what he brought forward. It is a huge list, and now WikiLeaks has been, without him at the helm. But still, I always wonder, you know, what's next, and who will come to the forefront to do this next, if looking at Assange to see what happens to Assange, and if we do kill him, if he's in our custody or care, they like to call it. I think that's pretty sick. But yeah, what are they going to do to him, and what does that do to journalism for people that are trying to blow the whistle? Be right back. A little bit more on Assange when we come back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Need some help in planning for the future? Tune into your family and your retirement.
Lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
She broke my heart, but I'll never just say now. Hush, hush. I thought I heard her calling my name now. Hush, hush. I need her loving and I'm not screaming.
Listening to the Kate Daly Show, and just wanted to mention that you can go to katedalyradio.com, get the podcast. You can go to The Kate Daly Show on Facebook, The Kate Daly Show on Twitter. You can find me there. Join up. I'll talk to you there on my off time, you know, all those off hours I have. So I also welcome Alex Newman to the show. Alex, how can they find you on Twitter and your articles?
Thank you so much, Kate. So most of my articles go up at thenewamerican.com or in the print magazine. If you haven't subscribed yet, you can get that subscription right through thenewamerican.com. And then on social media, We have, you know, at New American Mag is on Twitter. We've got the New American Magazine's Facebook page. And then also I have a Facebook page. It's Alex J. Newman 86. And I'm on Twitter at AlexNewman_JOU.
Perfect. Thank you so much. You wrote this piece on Assange, and you were talking about all of the things that he exposed. And it's really good to remember what has been at stake, what has been exposed through Assange, and why they wanted him so badly. And I know that, there are some people out there that listen to Q, that there was a sort of like a narrative that he was being protected. I'm not a firm believer in that anymore. I don't think he's being protected. I actually think he is being drugged heavily. And are they killing him? Well, I don't know if I could go that far to say that. I don't know. But I will say that they've done it. They've done these kinds of things to people before. So it's not out of the realm of, possibility. And nobody has really seen him or heard from him, have they?
No, that's right.
It's, yeah.
I'm very suspicious of this idea that, you know, the Patriots are in charge and they're protecting Assange from the deep state. You know, I think there'd be easier ways of doing that than staging a phony arrest and staging a phony prosecution. It just strikes me as very bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I think, you know, a very chilling message to anybody who's involved in journalism. It's basically, you know, if you stumble across secret information on the deep state, if you publish it, we will find a way to destroy you, either legally or, you know, outside the scope of the law. And, you know, the article you mentioned that appeared in Lou Rockwell, I think, probably reflects
a little
more
bit
of reality in terms of what's going on with Assange. And, you know, we've had this now in America for quite some time. Yeah, you know, there's so many suspicious deaths of journalists. Michael Hastings, who was investigating the CIA and the NSA and their spying and all the rest of it, dead in a very, very bizarre car accident. You had Gary Webb, the guy who exposed the CIA's cocaine running.
Shot his, himself in the head twice.
Suicide.
Yeah.
Right,
shot,
two bullets in the head. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's almost like they want us to know. You know, anybody with two brain cells knows that the guy didn't shoot himself twice in the head.
Right.
It's almost like they want anybody who thinks to realize that if you cross the deep state, they will get you. And I feel like that's probably what's happening with Assange right now.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you on this one. And what are we going to do? Because it's totally under attack. And think about that. You know, as people step outside, you know, and look at it from a broad scope, look at the stuff he revealed on Hillary and Hillary's main guy, you know, that sicko John Podesta, and all the people surrounding that, and the pizza parties that they talked about in code, and the that the FBI will even tell you that's all code for pedophilia, and all the spirit, what did you call it? The spirit party.
Spirit cooking.
Spirit
well, for people who don't know, Kayla, if you don't mind, I'll just give a quick explanation. So John Podesta, we found out in one of his emails, was going to a spirit cooking at Marina Abramovich's house. And Marina Abramovich describes herself as an artist. Her Twitter handle is Abramovich666. And she conducts what these things called spirit cookings, which it's actually a ritual that was developed by Aleister Crowley. You know, the guy used to describe himself as the Beast, 666.
Yeah.
The media called him the wickedest man in the world. He was a pedophile, a sex fiend, a drug addict, a Satanist. You know, the whole do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law.
Right.
And he developed this ritual where you would mix blood and semen and, you know, gross, gross things all together in a cauldron. And you would write on the walls to summon these spirits. You know, and Crowley would tell you very happily that these were demonic forces. And so why was John Podesta going to an event like this? Why was his brother, Tony Podesta, you know, big-time deep state insider in Washington, D.C., why are these guys going to these types of things? And I think we deserve answers. You know, it goes right along with what happens in Bohemian Grove with these weirdos and their 40-foot stone owl and their strange rituals. The American people need to know these things.
I agree. By the way, has anyone seen Tony Podesta in a couple of years?
No, they're hiding out, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
There's a lot of questions that these guys need to be answering. And, you know, right now the deep state is doing their best to protect them. You notice you never hear anything about this in the mainstream media. It's all like, oh, you know, Russia must have hacked those emails, which is, of course, a bunch of baloney.
Right, right.
But and that's what they want us to focus on.
Yeah, and they've never been proven wrong, which should tell people volumes. So when the people that are accused of the tinfoil hat will go as far as to say some of these people are true Satanists and some of these people are, it is inconceivable what they're about and what they do. Why is it so inconceivable? The information was unearthed, thank you, Assange, unearthed about this, and they aren't even able to say it's not true. I mean, think about that for a minute and the implication of that. The people that I feel sad that people are called names that will actually go out on a limb and name it. And just what you just said about Aleister Crowley, if you say those things, oh my gosh, tinfoil hat, stick to Mueller, you know, or Mueller, right. However you want to say it. But,
exactly.
but that's the problem, is that we don't ever address it because we are unwilling to address it. And it was right in front of us. So I don't know what they have to do to get us to understand the gravity of it and how many people are involved in those kinds of things. And I'm grateful for Assange in doing that. We've got to protect our whistleblowers. Otherwise, we'll never have any.
That's exactly right. And, you know, that's how they do it at the United Nations, too. You know, they just wage war and they destroy absolutely and completely anybody who exposes what they're up to. And so much of this stuff just gets swept under the rug. People know, oh, well, if I blow the whistle, nothing's going to happen anyways. I'm going to be destroyed. I may end up dead. You know, we're better off just keeping our mouths shut and going along to get along. And, you know, it's been so effective for them. And I hear these stories in the UN every day. Oh, I tried to blow the whistle on UN troops raping children all over the place. And all that happened was I lost my job. They threw me in jail. And, you know, they called me a kook. So
it's
got to stop.
It's really sad. I know journalists were being detained at Bilderberg, and Bilderberg starts today, goes through June 2nd, and it's the meeting of the globalists. Their entire agenda is how to ruin sovereign countries and make them under the global agenda. Every single thing on the list, and I actually went through the list, I think, on a show at the beginning of the week on the air. But tell me a little bit, you were there, and so these journalists being detained, that's got to worry you.
Yes. You know, I've been to several Bilderberg meetings. Not obviously as an invited guest. You know, you have to be a globalist to get on the guest list there, or at least a useful idiot of the globalist who believes the same nonsense they do, even if it's for naive, well-intentioned reasons. But, they did detain some of these journalists. So the Swiss police did at the airport in Geneva, and that's very troubling. You know, and the Swiss police typically are pretty decent people. I used to live in Switzerland, and, you know, Switzerland is very much a free country to the extent that free countries still exist in the world. But, you know, they don't mess around with these Bilderberg people. And the fact that apparently this is the most secrecy they've ever had. They only just released the place where it was going to be. They only just released the guest list. And very, very troubling that they're now detaining journalists and intimidating journalists. They obviously don't want this stuff covered. But, you know, that means that's even more essential that it get covered.
How many meetings were you able to attend? And how many meetings were you not able to attend when you were there?
For the Bilderberg group, the first one I went to, actually, it's kind of a crazy story. I managed to book myself a room at the Bilderberg Hotel, despite the fact that the Bilderberg was going on, just through some smooth talking. So I was able to get in, and I was able to walk among the globalists a little bit. So that was fun. Yeah, that was in Virginia. I called up, and I was like, hey, I need to book a room. Like, oh, no, you can't book a room, sir. We have the whole hotel is booked for the weekend. I said, do you know who this is? My name is Alex Newman. I'm the CEO of Liberty Sentinel Media Incorporated. You give me a room right now, please.
Your smooth talking.
So that was fun. Yeah. And then I also went to the one in Copenhagen, and I wasn't able to get into that one. But I did talk to some of the Bilderbergers outside. I get the feeling that the Bilderbergers I spoke with were actually of the useful idiot variety. They felt so important and so cool that they were invited to the Bilderberg meeting. They wanted to come out and brag to everybody. But if you listen to the Bilderbergers, they'll tell you what they're up to. You know, they've admitted in public their goal is a world government, although they claim it's for our own good. They've admitted that they established policy there. And, you know, that means every American there who doesn't have permission from the U.S. government is in violation of the Logan Act. And it is kind of globalism HQ. You know, 150 of the most powerful people in the world get together to plot globalism.
And the way they do it is, if anyone's curious, is, and I know that I'm probably preaching to the choir with this audience, but the way they do it is they actually decide on policy, right? And then they filter it down through the think tanks who are behind those in office. They write the policies out. They actually write out all the laws. When you see a 3,000-page bill come out, it's usually not the elected official having even a part of that. The think tank does it. This is why so much of Congress and the Senate is bought off, because they do it. They decide everything. It's shoved through as through the representation of our elected officials and put on the docket for a vote, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's what happens. In fact, if you listen to the Bilderbergers, they'll tell you that. They write up, they discuss policy, they write up a report, and then when the globalists get back to their home countries, they're expected to use these ideas and these policy proposals and initiatives and advance those in their sphere of influence. And so that's what you see after every Bilderberg. You get all these globalists go back to their countries, and you suddenly see all these policies materialize in unison all over the world, like the Iraq War, or like Bill Clinton needs to be president, or you know, Tony Blair needs to be prime minister. It's just incredible.
And these useful idiots go back and deliver the message for the collective good as being a wonderful thing, because these people are so caring and so wonderful. They want to clean up the earth, and they're all about earth, and it's fabulous, and look what they're doing for us, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. So, you know, when people ask me about the Bilderberg, I always differentiate. You know, there are globalist conspirators there who I'm absolutely convinced are evil, and, you know, they understand that they're evil, and then they bring in the useful idiots who are goofy enough, who are dumb enough, who are naive enough to believe that this global government agenda is really for the benefit of humanity, and we really should be ruled by our superiors, by our betters, and they believe this stuff. You know, they think the world's going to be a better place when they're running everything and we're all in subjection, and there's plenty of those who go to these meetings, and, you know, I've spoken to some of them. I think they are true believers, and, you know, they're useful idiots. I think they're equally culpable, because they have a responsibility here to educate themselves and to not be an elitist like this. But no, these are dangerous people.
I agree. And, you know, even in talking this way about the Bilderberg, all of a sudden gets the tinfoil hat, you know, destination for a lot of people, even people that are listening to this show. And what I want to I say about that is that the useful idiots come into play in this way, too, is in each organization. I don't care if you're talking about the CFR. I don't care if you're talking about the creators of the PNAC. Whatever you want to talk about in the realm of forming policy or government or forecasts for what's going on or what they want to have happen or agenda. The useful idiots serve a great purpose, because that occupies so much of the group. Then you have the group that's in the know, like you just said. And I think you brought up a brilliant point, because what happens then is people will come to me and go, but how can that many people stay quiet? They're not staying quiet. A select few are usually in the know, and they usually compartmentalize that to the select few. Then what they do is they spin it out to the useful idiots, and this can be in a think tank. This can be all in all, even elected officials are the useful idiot in that group, whatever the case may be. But they spin it out to them, and so that's why you don't have a ton of people in on everything, is because they would never do that. You've got a select few running things, and then you've got the useful idiots to deliver the message, and they deliver it well, because they get out in the public eye and they're delivering it to the tune of, this is good for you, and we should buy into human caused global climate change, and all of these things. These are a lot of useful idiots. This is how it gets done, and how it gets done in the secrecy too, realm of it too. I'll be right back. More with Alex Newman. Ran up against the clock. Be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Do you love sleep?
It's an invented Coca-Cola.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
We all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evil.
Welcome back, Kate Daly Show. I have Alex Newman. Isn't he great? I love Alex, because Alex just says it. I mean, there's just few people that'll just say it, and I love it. Welcome back. You can go to katedalyradio.com for today's podcast. Share that far and wide in comment sections and in chat rooms. I don't care where you share it. Share it, and let's get the word out. Let's get people educated on some of these things, because we were just talking, Alex and I, on the break about the fact that a lot of this kind of stuff, I get told this a lot. How do that many people keep it quiet? Because that many people aren't keeping it quiet. And that's the whole key to this, is that there is an element, a very large element within every organization that I don't trust, or I don't like, or I don't like what their agenda is, that are the useful idiots that are kind of like the Alexandria, or maybe even a little brighter than than Pocket Lint, but yeah, a little brighter, but also are the useful idiot that deliver the message, and they think they're doing a good job delivering the message.
Yeah, and I think that's crucial to understanding the Bilderberg and even the deep state. You know, I think one of the most revealing books about the Council on Foreign Relations was put out there by Admiral Chester Ward, who spent 16 years as a member of the CFR. And, you know, he blew the whistle on the fact that these people are working to subvert American sovereignty, to build up a world government, to undermine our Constitution. But one of the key takeaways from his book, and he worked with Phyllis Schlafly on this and others, is that you really have an inner core that kind of dominates the CFR. And he said, you know, at the center of this inner core was the Rockefeller brothers, David, you know, the late David Rockefeller mm-hmm. and his brothers, Nelson Rockefeller and company. And when you understand it that way, you realize that a lot of these people who are involved, you know, there is a certain elitism associated with it, but a lot of them genuinely believe this stuff. A lot of them just think, hey, this is, you know, a great way to further my career, and I can mm-hmm. rub shoulders with, you know, the who's who of Washington and New right. York. And so it's not necessarily, you know, these guys are all conspirators working in the smoky room plotting mm-hmm. to take over the world like Pinky and the Brain. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are just, you know, along for the ride. It's, you know, they think it's going to do good for them. Some of them really believe, you know, this is how we get rid of war and socialism mm-hmm. is good because then we'll have more equality. And Bilderberg is very much the same way. You have the steering committee that really guides the organization. They decide who's going to come. They mm-hmm. decide what items are going to be on the agenda. They decide who's going to be hurt and who's not. And, you know, a lot of the people who come to Bilderberg are just people who have made it into positions of influence on their own, people who, you know, ended up in charge of a newspaper or mm-hmm. running a political party. And they maybe have expressed some sympathy with globalism, so they invite them in and hear them out and, you know, do you line up with what we want? They don't necessarily have to be thinking in terms of evil. They just may believe, yeah, we need more globalism. And they mm-hmm. say, oh, you're a good, useful idiot. We'll advance your career. We'll help you become prime minister. And that's how so much of this gets done, Kate. And
yeah.
that's why, you know, when people ask what you just mentioned, you know, how do so many people keep it a secret? You need to realize that it's not so many people necessarily keeping a secret.
Yeah, and it's not so secret. They've been out
there,
they've been out there ousting this and saying things and doing this. They don't hide. At all. I mean, I bring this up a lot, but Alexandria Cortez announces she's in a casting call, announces she was picked by an organization to deliver their message. We didn't elect that organization. The people of New York elected her, but she's delivering their message, paid and bought and everything else. And so if they're willing to go that far to even conduct a casting call, to even say, yeah, we are so proud of this, they're out there. So this isn't secret. And what I always find kind of alarming is that people don't have the eyes to see it. And it's in so many agendas of the groups that you just named, of a lot of organizations we bring up on the air. And it truly is the way that their organization is going and gearing towards. It's kind of like Agenda 21, Agenda 30, all the agendas, Agenda 50, whatever it is. It all starts with this agenda. This agenda gets implemented, and then what do people say in a local community? Oh, this is nice. It's a smart city. It's nice. You know, they don't question that what is the end game of this, and there are a lot of people out there, when they do their job, they don't realize they're playing a bigger part as a cog in the wheel of something much bigger and more horrifying.
That's exactly right, Kay. You know, they frame this stuff in terms that anybody can accept. Oh, we need to stop hunger. We need to save the planet. We need to mm-hmm. you know, save the whales. You know, pick your little cause. And these are things that just have an appeal to people. But if you don't understand the ultimate agenda, if you don't understand the real goals of these people, then it's easy to get swept up in this. Everybody wants to have a clean planet and clean air and clean water and you know, save the whales and, mm-hmm. and, you know, all these kinds of nice things, end poverty. So it's very easy to get naive, useful idiots enlisted in these causes, especially when there's massive amounts of money, you know, huge amounts of celebrity and other benefits that come along with jumping on this bandwagon. It's not hard to find useful idiots to push this. And as long as the useful idiots don't dig too deep, you know, and bump their heads on the truth, they can, in good conscience, just promote all this as if it were nothing.
Yeah. Another one, I think, and this is credit to you and the pieces that you do, the piece that you just did, is Betsy DeVos. Is she a person that is centered, quite focused on her job because she's in the public eye, and so it's all about her job and satisfying those that are maybe the whispering behind her of what needs to happen next or what needs to occur? Could she be another useful idiot? You know, a smarter gal, but still a useful idiot when it comes to what part she is in the cog in the wheel. And so tell me a little bit about what she was just saying.
Yeah, well, this is very troubling. As far as I know, I'm the only one who reported this publicly so far. But she gave a speech a couple weeks ago at the Young Americas Foundation, which, you know, it's conservative youth. It's mm-hmm. kind of on the neocon side, but, you know, mm-hmm. generally speaking, they align with us on some things. So isn't this Charlie Kirk? The Reagan Ranch.
Right? It's Charlie Kirk, all of those, right?
Is that well, no, I think Charlie Kirk is TPUSA, Turning Point USA.
You're right, Turning Point. Sorry. I was thinking Turning Point. Yeah. Go right ahead. I apologize.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, Yaff kind of has roots with Bill Buckley and, the pseudo-conservative movement, the skull and bones wing of the conservative movement, if you will.
Excellent.
But so they invited Betsy DeVos, and she gave a speech. And at about 22 minutes in, she said, you know, we've traditionally had this notion of public education and then, you know, private education. Mm-hmm. But we need to get over that. We need to recognize that all education benefits the public. And so I think we need a new definition of public education. All education should be considered public education. And she was using that as kind of a starting point to promote so-called school choice. You know, they want to start handing out federal tax dollars to private schools and to homeschoolers and charter schools and all these things. But we need to stop and think about what this means. If all education is public education, that means the public ought to be entitled to have a say in this public education. And that's where this is moving. You know, unfortunately, I think Betsy DeVos is a useful idiot, and I think her reason for being right now is to try to bring, and she may not have any clue how subversive this agenda is, but they're using her to try to bring private education, independent schools, Christian schools, homeschoolers under the umbrella of government control. And of course, the best way to do that is with federal money. And my dad always used to tell me, with federal aid comes federal control. And he mm-hmm. meant, you know, as long as I put a roof over your head, you need to obey me. And so same is true with the federal government. If they start paying the bills, they start calling the tune. They decide what standards are used. They decide what's going to be taught. And, if we lose our educational liberty, it will be guaranteed the end of this country. So we need to fight back on this. And I wish more people were talking about what Betsy DeVos is doing. You know, a lot of Trump supporters just refuse to hear anything negative about stuff happening in the Trump administration. But this is serious. This is not what Trump ran on. He ran on shutting down the Department of Education and getting rid of Common Core, not having a federal takeover of private schools, Christian schools, and homeschools.
That's right. Reagan wanted to do away with Department of Education, too, and then he got shot at. Then he dropped it.
That's right.
Really, really fast.
That's right.
He wanted to get rid of Department of Commerce, right, too. And so all of a sudden, boom, that warning shot came. You know what this reminds me of, too? I did a show on the EduBlocks, the education of the future. You know how Betsy just alluded to the fact that all education is all education and so forth? And that is the trading of EduBlocks on a system where basically it's learning for life, but you also have to teach somebody something and you get credit like money, but it's credited to you in a different form, digital currency. And you can use that to buy things, but you have to teach them something on, say, human-caused global warming. So if you're not teaching on what the government wants you to teach about, then you don't get credit for it. So it gears people into following the narrative and regurgitating the narrative one to another, and that these EduBlocks become sort of the system of the future for adults. Adults will be paid by educating people in the future.
Yeah, and notice also you'll only learn things that the government wants you to learn. You'll only mm-hmm. teach things that the government wants you to teach. They'll keep track of all this. You know, there was even talk of putting it all on the blockchain. So, you know, forever, for all eternity, everybody will be able to see exactly what you've been brainwashed with, exactly what you're capable mm-hmm. of doing. And the totalitarian implications of this are very serious. In fact, I think what we need to be looking at is this social credit system that's developing in China now, where all of this data is being compiled, and you're getting a score. You know, if you have mm-hmm. friends who question the government, your score goes down. If you've ever said anything that questions the government, your score goes down. We need to be looking at this, because this kind of system is being developed worldwide. It's happening even here in the United States.
Yeah.
And this is very, very troubling if you support freedom and liberty.
Oh, it just makes me ill. I'll never forget watching that video, because this is kind of a social credit in a different way. On the EduBlocks, basically mm-hmm. earning credit, so you're earning money, because a lot of the jobs will be farm to home jobs, but they'll all be part-time-ish. And so if that ever happened, people would want to be able to make money from home. And the only other way to make money from home from a job like that, using your computer or network or whatever, would be to be educating somebody and then getting credit for it as it's being recorded, so that you're having to constantly follow along the narrative and regurgitate it. And, you know, this is being done in our public schools right now. And I know Freedom Project Academy just celebrated their, this is Dr. Pesta, they celebrated their eighth year. And I think that's just remarkable what's being done. There are avenues, there are solutions and other things we can do. We just need to be vigilant, be aware of them, because we can't just keep going. How long are we just going to keep going along with this kind of stuff? I mean, her saying that was huge.
Yeah, it is a big deal. And, you know, just in the last few weeks, I'm on a national speaking tour. I've had the opportunity to speak at least three Christian schools so far, one in Georgia, one in South Carolina, and two in Virginia. And, you know, I'm seeing amazing things, but the establishment doesn't want that. You know, they don't want this proliferation of real education in private Christian schools that are independent from federal control. So there's now a full-blown effort. You see the NEA, the teachers' union, saying we need to ban homeschooling. You see the federal government now trying to bring them all under control. You see Betsy DeVos saying we need to redefine public education so that all education is public education. We need to recognize that our educational liberty, which is a fundamental right that God gave us, in fact, it's a responsibility, right? It's not something that should be within the purview of government. It is under major threat. You have the UN Human Rights Council pass a resolution in 2015 saying governments need to crack down on private schools. They all need to be subjected to the same standards. So we at Freedom Project, we don't take a dime of government money precisely for this reason. You know, we refuse to do what the government says when it comes to education. We'd rather give kids a proper, decent, good, God-centered education.
Yeah.
But everybody's got to be involved in this battle if we're going to keep our freedom.
That is so true. That is so true. And, you know, just circling back to the beginning of the program, you know, are you worried as a journalist? I mean, I've seen so many whistleblower journalists that even tried to whistleblow about what was going on, and it's very hard. It's very hard. Do you worry?
How can you see all this and not worry? It's very concerning. I worry about the future of our country. I worry about what kind of society my children are going to grow up in. And I hope that there's still enough God-fearing, liberty-loving Americans that we can, you know, hold this at bay for at least several more generations, maybe longer. But, you know, we can't kid ourselves and say everything's fine and we can just sit back and Trump is going to fix everything for us. That's not, you know, in line with reality. We've got to get involved, and that means all of us who value freedom, who value our constitutional republic, we've got to get involved if we hope to preserve those things.
I agree. And this news about Assange is really troubling, and I hope we... I don't know what we can do about it. I really don't. It's frightening, because who knows what's happening to him on a daily basis right now. But the fact that he was able to oust all of that, we actually have been better because we have known some of the things going on, and we're able to pinpoint some of these things. Without him, we wouldn't have been able to. And he prayed. He obviously has sacrificed and spent what, 7 years because to preserve this right. And so I really do hope we can look at that and understand the sacrifices being made in our behalf, because there really are. That's a huge sacrifice. So, Alex Newman, you can find him at The New American. He's all over the place, actually. And like you said, on a public speaking tour, which I have no doubt, because he's that good. Also, make sure that you hit him up on Twitter as well. Alex Newman is one of the best, and I really encourage you to follow his work and his pieces. He's after the right stories. Thanks so much, Alex. I really appreciate
you. Thank you. Keep up the awesome work.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Be right back on The Kate Daly Show. Let's talk about global politics, shall we? Be right back.